Hello, this is Frankly Speaking, an informational exchange of problems and issues of relevance to people everywhere. Today's program addresses the subject of art in the community. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for George Mason University. Later in the program, we'll interview Sandra Schweitzer, author of a recent article on prisoner art. But first, we'll talk with Juanita Passmore, Assistant Director of Communications for Johnson Products and Program Director of the Great Beautiful Black Women Exhibit. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I'm interested in finding out for the public that's unfamiliar with your company, who is Johnson Products, the man behind the scenes, and exactly what is your product?
I am certainly glad you asked that first, because so many people get the Johnsons mixed up, but we are the Afro Sheen, Ultra Sheen company of called Johnson Products, who bring you Soul Train every weekend and bring the very fine products out, and we've been in business for 25 years. Now, Mr. George E. Johnson, who is the president of the company, started 27 years ago with the one product called Ultra Wave. He really wanted to enlarge, though, the company and make it a very sophisticated product, a very sophisticated company, and he didn't have the money. So he went to his wife and he talked to her. He said, listen, we've got a good product here. How do we really get this the money for it? They went to the bank and they were turned down. Said, no, we didn't see the
value.
That's right, that kind of a company. So would you believe they went back and said that they wanted to borrow the money for a vacation, and they got the money. So we say our company started on a small lie, and we're now the largest black manufacturer of cosmetics for our color in the world, with the new plant in Nigeria. We hire over 400 people, and it's just, listen, it is the loveliest place in the world to work for. And we have tours all very often from all over the world. People come to see Johnson Products in operation.
Now, you're project director of Great Beautiful Black Women. I'm sure some of our audience is familiar with that name, and yet there are many who have not been exposed to it. I think we should tell them something about it.
Well, I think the term right there, that many have not been exposed to it, tells a little bit of something about why we have the project. Johnson Products commissioned, this is Mr. Johnson, commissioned an artist called Mr. Paul Collins, an artist, to portray these 14 women on the occasion of our 25th anniversary. And part of that reason was because historically black women have not been documented, and therefore our history of great beautiful black women has been lost. And we thought that if we could draw attention to the American public, to the market that really has made us successful, they would be appreciative, and other markets, of course, would be knowledgeable about our black history. So you can well imagine how hard it was to come up with 14 women out of all the possible black subjects that we could have named.
Exactly. How did Johnson Products decide on the 14 great, beautiful black women?
Well, it was not easy. We had about 400 and some odd names submitted by people. Many times, listen to this, would you, that they suggested their mothers, aunties, and dear friends. But, of course, those weren't the names that we were looking for. But we also had around the company a blackboard that we would run in and dash a name on for consideration. Maybe we had remembered from our own black history or from our studies and research of black people. And they were deleted one by one to come down to the different categories of representation that we wanted. We started with the Queen of Sheba, who of course is mythical in our reproduction of her. No one has ever known what the Queen of Sheba looked like. But would you believe that people come in and say they feel a kindred to the Queen of Sheba, and for many people, she's one of their favorite. That's really how it came about, the picking of the names and then the associating the names with the different times in history and the impact they made from the from the Queen of Sheba right on up to Wilma Rudolph, who is the youngest subject in the collection.
So there were some outsiders outside of Johnson's Products who made the decision.
Oh, definitely. Our historians and activists and citizens came from different walks of life and different cities to help us make the final selection. Lerone Bennett, of course, was the noted historian, one of the historians who helped us.
So how long ago was this exhibit commissioned, and how long have you been associated with this project?
Well, the project has been in the works, was in the works 2 years before it was finalized, and I've been with it a year after the exhibit started. I was already with the company, but in another capacity, and we had outsiders to do the job. And after we saw it was going to be a successful run and evidently go on indeterminately in its length of time because the public really wants it, then Mr. Johnson made me the project director.
Your exhibit has recently been at George Mason University. The university was fortunate enough for Johnson Products to have decided to leave it here on exhibit for quite some time. And there were a number of events associated around it, one being that George Mason University also selected 14 great black women of Northern Virginia. Now you're moving your project on. George Mason's time is finished, and you have your next stop, which is here in the vicinity.
Well, we're going to be at the Federal Home Loan Bank Boyd Building at 1700 G Street Northwest in Washington, D.C.
Has the exhibit had effects on different people? And if so, what kind of effects?
Well, Stephanie, I've been fortunate to be at the receptions when we had hundreds of people to view on the first nights that they're in an area. And I've had some of the most moving experiences. I've seen women and men and children react to some of them. Some of them, they reach out to actually to touch it, see if it's three-dimensional, if they can feel the hair and the skin textures. Tears have come to some of their eyes, and they have been rejoicing over such an exhibit. First of all, to have an exhibit of this type by a black company. It's the first time that a black company has commissioned art to travel, so that in itself is great. And then to have they meet the artist at the reception, and to have the artist to tell why he developed and how he developed the art that he uses. It's a dry medium, and how the women were selected, and then to read their history and to know that it's there for white and black and for the entire community to see and be educated by. It is a moving experience.
Unfortunately, we must wrap up this subject and move on to part two of Art in the Community. Our guest is Sandra Schweitzer. Ms. Schweitzer is the author of an article that recently appeared in the Arlington Journal, Exploring Their Creative Urges, Arlington Prisoners Learn Self-Discipline Through Art. She is also a coordinator of the activities of the Metro Campus Professional Center and the George Mason University Information Center at the Arlington campus. Sandra, there's so much in your article, I don't know where to begin, but let me just ask you, what inspired you to actually do this particular article?
I was just amazed of the sensitivity in the art. There was one picture in particular which almost had a porcelain finish, a woman who was very, very beautiful. I looked at the other art. It was so expressive and expansive, and I wondered, how could alleged felons, alleged criminals, create this beautiful bit of beauty here in the Arlington Police Department?
You specifically dealt with the Arlington County Detention Center, and Barry Draper was the beginning aspect of your article. Why that particular individual?
He was probably the most sensitive. His crime, as far as I'm concerned, was, it was a nonviolent crime. It was actually, I think, in stolen credit cards. But anyway, he was a poet. He showed me page after page of his poetry, and he was a very good artist. He had done some of the more sensitive portraits. He had also done some of the cartoons, but he was very concerned with expressing himself through his art and through his writing. And from him, I interviewed about 9 of the other prisoners, and I came up with almost a summary that each of the men in there do have a need to create.
How did all of the research actually come about?
I walked in and they decided I had to write a story on this art because it was so good. So I got in contact with Deputy Ernie Buck and then Deputy Charles Dean of the Detention Center, and they introduced me to Sheriff Gondels. He okayed the project. He was very favorable. And so I started attending classes. It was 8 weeks. It was like an hour per day. And I went over to the detention center. Brooke Todd was the instructor. He came into the class, gave them the assignment for the day, just talked with them. And then he taught them particular skills in drawing, in printing. And then he let them more or less be on their own. Sometimes the prisoners could take the art back to their cells, and then they created further. The materials were provided by the Lawyers' Wives of Arlington. I think in a major part of the program was sponsored by the Offender Aid and Restoration group in Arlington.
Do you know if this program was open to any prisoner? Was there a criteria for the selection of these 10 men, whether or not they had to have some prior artistic talents, or could anyone become involved?
Anyone with a desire to learn and to draw and to paint could sign up for the program. Because of the space limitation, only 10 people were permitted. And fortunately, there was a turnover. People were released, or maybe people were sent to prisoner farms. But new prisoners came to the program and learned new skills. And as mentioned in the article, one of Mr. Todd's primary objectives was to teach these men self-discipline through art. And as I walked in that classroom, I was amazed. I expected to walk in, be under armed guard or something. It was just something I expected. I'd never been in a jail, never been in a prison before. I walked in, and these men were sitting at their tables very quietly, drawing and creating. The experience was very good. They were extreme gentlemen, and Mr. Todd was doing what I would consider a very good job with the class, because he not only taught them to draw, he listened to them, and I know that they keep in touch with them after they have been transferred, or after they're released.
Barry Draper had a quotation which you used at the beginning of your article. We choose our sorrows long before we experience them. What does that actually mean?
I think what he was alluding to is basically we all know the difference between wrong and right, or what society says is wrong and right. And so what I think is he was saying, I took the chance, I got caught, and so therefore in advance I chose my situation right now. And I know personally he was trying to make the best of it. He was writing. He was creating. His attitude was very positive. And as a matter of fact, he'll probably be surprised when he gets a copy of this article, because if any credit can be given, it can be given to him.
Let me ask you what their art actually conveys. I haven't seen this art in person. I've only seen what you have depicted in your article. But what are they trying to say through this artistic motion?
I'm just a layperson. I'm going completely on intuition. A lot of it is an escape from frustration. A lot of it conveys anger, some of the more bizarre fantasies. Some of it is very introspective, like the landscapes, where, like Carlos said, I actually lose myself in the painting. Some of it is just purely trying to express themselves in their station of life right now in the prison. And most of it, though, I think, is an appeal for understanding. It's mixed. You can find the very, very delicate and subtle to the very, very bizarre. But one thing, it is all interesting. And another thing, they do concentrate. They completely immerse themselves in their art. And you can see it changing, excuse me, from one format to another. I think a lot of it is dependent upon, right now, they are locked up in tiny, narrow cells. They really have nothing to look forward to except for when they get out. So I think what they are doing is creating a kind of beauty, something that they can look at, something that they can live with, because man does need to create. And I think this is their answer to beauty, probably brought on in a major part by the surroundings of iron, metal, concrete, and no light, no natural light in the windows. I think that they are reaching out and expressing themselves through the best medium they know how under the circumstances.
Is your final assessment that the program is well worth it?
Yes, the program is well worth it.
I'd like to thank you for being here. We've been talking about art in the community. Our first segment was on the Great Beautiful Black Women exhibit with Juanita Passmore from Johnson Products. And part two was on art and prisoners. Sandra Schweitzer, who's the author of an article that recently appeared in the Arlington Journal, exploring their creative urges, Arlington prisoners learn self-discipline through art. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public affairs program produced by George Mason University. For information about our guest or this program, you can call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.